This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The national debate over legalizing marijuana recreationally rages on, but business is booming around the drug's non-hallucinogenic chemical compound called CBD.
I am a 20-year-old college student.
I'm a retired police officer.
I am 84 years old.
I'm a healthcare practitioner.
I'm a disabled veteran, and I use CBD oil for numerous ailments.
Advil, Aleve, ibuprofen, prescription strength, painkiller. Nothing was dulling the pain.
I knit and crochet and play piano, and I was having a tough time.
They gave me 3 different types of ointment to try.
I was very skeptical at first, but as soon as I started trying it and my lower back pain just disappeared, I was a believer.
I have really bad anxiety and during finals and just having a lot of pressure as a first-generation student. I thought CBD would really work for me.
I found that whenever I started feeling that anxious feeling, I would take a puff of the vapor or eat a gummy, and I would immediately feel almost like a breath of fresh air.
Massage lotion, lip gloss. It's very anti-inflammatory, very soothing, very healing.
My body doesn't ache. I sleep better, and I wake up not as tired.
It's wonderful. Can't emphasize it more or recommend it more.
A new Gallup poll shows that 1 in 7 Americans says they use CBD. 1 in 7. From chocolate to cocktails to soap to hair care products, you'd be hard-pressed to find something the compound has not been combined with. There are even CBD products for your pet. Rolling Stone projects that this market will hit $22 billion in the next few years. And anecdotally, as you just heard, it's done everything from improve sleep to reduce seizures. But how much do we know about CBD? What does the research tell us? Is it a viable cure for certain health problems, or is it more trend than treatment? Later, we'll hear from a CBD business owner, as well as an account of its effects for people with serious medical conditions. And we'd love to hear your stories and your questions about CBD. So email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Joining us from Los Angeles is Ziva Cooper, the research director at UCLA's Cannabis Research Initiative. Ziva, welcome to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
And here with us in studio is Jane O'Donnell, a health policy reporter for USA Today. Jane, welcome back to the program.
So nice to be here again.
Ziva, let's start with you, just the basics. First of all, what is CBD? What does CBD stand for?
CBD stands for cannabidiol. And cannabidiol is one of the many unique chemical components that's found in the cannabis plant. And the reason for its popularity, or one of the reasons for its popularity right now, is because unlike another component that a lot of people know about in the cannabis plant called THC, cannabidiol does not get you high. So you can use it and you don't feel high. You don't have cognitive impairment. You don't have some of the adverse effects that people experience with THC.
What exactly does CBD do in the body?
So that is the $64 million question that people are really trying to figure out right now. So as we heard from your listeners, people are using CBD for a range of indications. And CBD is thought to have tens of different ways that it interacts with the body and the brain. And for each one of these indications, it's probably interacting with the brain and body in a different way. So researchers are trying to figure out, A, what does CBD do? And B, how does CBD do it?
One listener tweeted, "For my job, I drive and do deliveries. I'm worried taking CBD products might show up in a drug test." Ziva, would it show up, or is it too different to compound from THC?
So this is a question that comes up a lot. And in part, it's rooted in complications with respect to how is CBD being provided to the consumer, and also is CBD itself detected in a urine toxicology screen, let's say detecting THC. And if people are taking pure CBD, that is, if there's no THC in that product, it should not be detected as THC in these employment screens. However, it's important to know, and this might come up later on in the show as well, that you know, not all these CBD products are pure THC, or not all CBD products are accurately labeled. So there might be some THC in those CBD products, and consumers should definitely be aware of that.
And there are also, Ziva, there are some products that label themselves as containing both CBD and THC on purpose.
On purpose, or some products label themselves as just being CBD, but they might have THC in it as well. And some products label themselves as CBD, but don't have CBD in them. And sometimes they could have some pretty hazardous substances in those products.
We'll talk a little bit more about the consumer aspect of knowing what you're getting a little bit later on. But Jane O'Donnell, let me come to you. The 2018 Farm Bill changed the way that hemp is regulated by the federal government. How does that apply to CBD?
Well, it ended up loosening the restrictions on it. So there's been a lot more CBD promoted all different places. You see it everywhere now. I think it's really picked up since then. But it's still the regulatory system around CBD is, for lack of a better word, a mess, because it's federally allowed under a certain level of THC, but different states treat it differently. And I just happened to learn yesterday that my own state of Virginia, you have to have a prescription. So in effect, the CBD cream I bought to try out on my arm was breaking the law.
So doctors can prescribe CBD?
A CBD oil, yeah.
Is CBD legal?
So it'd be, you know, it depends on your state. Federally it is, but you have to really be careful about what you're, I mean, I can't imagine, the enforcement really is non-existent, but there have been stories. I was pitched repeatedly about a woman who was supposedly stopped at an airport with CBD that she didn't know had THC, but it did have THC. So I'd be very careful if I were buying it, and be careful, well, for a variety of reasons that we're going to get into, about what you're actually getting. And whether you're even getting CBD, and whether it even works and is worth the money, but also, is it legal in your state, and certainly when you're traveling?
Is there an overlap, Jane, in terms of state law with whether the state has decriminalized cannabis for medical or recreational use? It's not an apples to apples legal comparison. They're two different sets of law, right?
Right, but generally speaking, I think I'd feel safer in a state that's legalized marijuana than I would in, say, the Deep South.
Now, the FDA can still regulate products with cannabis and cannabis-derived compounds like CBD, right? That's
right.
Still within the FDA's purview.
Right. But they're being right now they're being regulated like a diet supplement, like some things that you would buy at St. John's Wort or whatever else there is at the drugstore. So there isn't the kind of clinical trials that you would get from a drug, which there we can talk later about whether those are, you know, there's a lot of distrust of those, but there is certain very good safety parameters and some efficacy that's built into that. Should make people feel safer.
Yeah, diet products, I don't think, or, you know, sports nutrition supplements don't really get on the FDA's radar unless somebody complains and says,
right.
Hey, I think that there's something wrong with this.
If there's these adverse events, people have all sorts of problems that they report to the government.
We're speaking to Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter for USA Today, and Ziva Cooper, who's the research director of UCLA's Cannabis Research Initiative. We should note that we did reach out to the Food and Drug Administration. They said they were not able to provide someone for this conversation. That invitation, of course, still stands. But this month, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb spoke on CNBC. He left the agency in April. And Mr. Gottlieb talked about the need for more regulations surrounding CBD. Here's part of what he said.
So if FDA does define a legal pathway, because right now all of this CBD is illegal that's being put in food or dietary supplements. If FDA,
it's illegal.
Illegal. There's nothing legal on the market right now except for maybe some of the emulsions that don't get absorbed like creams and the drug that's approved. There, you can define a legal pathway to get CBD onto the market, but if you do, FDA would apply what we call good manufacturing practices to make sure it's being manufactured in proper formulations.
That's former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb speaking on CNBC. So, Jane, if it's illegal to have it in food, why are there so many food and drink products infused with CBD out there?
Because they're not enforcing it. That's the mess I was describing. And I think further complicating or further confusing the matter, Dr. Gottlieb recently came out and said that he thinks marijuana should be legalized federally. But I think that goes to, if something was legalized, there would be more safeguards against you know, there'd be things, dosages and purity and those kinds of things would be more strictly monitored.
Ziva, plenty of questions about what CBD is and does, including from James. He tweeted, are there any addiction concerns about using CBD? Ziva?
So that's an interesting question. And the truth is that based on studies done thus far, there really isn't a signal for what we call like addictive potential or abuse potential of CBD. But again, you know, it's important to recognize that the product that you might be taking might have other substances in it, which might have psychoactive effects that might be addictive. So with respect to pure CBD, you know, administered orally, it doesn't seem like there is a signal for addictive potential.
Is there any sense, or what's your sense of the research landscape in terms of the effort to confirm what CBD is and does? Is there a lot of research going on, or is it still kind of new?
Because of the immense boom in attention to CBD, I think that there's been a strong force propelling research in this area forward. So, you know, again, as we heard from your listeners, people across the board, men, women, all different ages who are suffering from all different symptoms are taking this. And researchers really need to figure out what it's doing and how it can be done.
We're speaking with Ziva Cooper of UCLA's Cannabis Research Initiative and Jane O'Donnell of USA Today. Coming up, we'll hear a firsthand account of CBD's medical effects on a variety of conditions, including epilepsy. And we'll get to some more of your questions. Nigel emailed, please discuss the difference between CBD oil and hemp oil. Good question. We'll get that answered in a minute. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you for your daily dose of 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing CBD with Ziva Cooper of UCLA's Cannabis Research Initiative and health reporter Jane O'Donnell of USA Today. We'd love to hear from you, too. If you've used products with CBD, what did you try? Why did you try it? Did it work? Perhaps you are in the CBD business. Are you a manufacturer? Are you a retailer? What's bringing folks into the shop? How satisfied are they with what they get? And how are you doing in dealing with some of the regulatory issues around running your business? Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A or email 1A@WAMU.org. Before we keep going, Jane, there was a point you wanted to make regarding the clip we just played from former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb.
Yeah, just that it's very interesting he's saying that now, because it was back in April before he left. It was like days before he left. He was saying basically just that he was concerned major pharmacies and retail stores were selling it and wanted to remind them that the FDA's job is to protect the consumer. That's very different than saying CVS, you're breaking the law. So there's a nuance there. And it's important to note that the Farm Bill removed the restrictions on low THC hemp that's used to produce CBD. So it's no longer in the category with marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. So there's a lot of gray area there, and that was a pretty extreme statement, and there isn't enforcement that goes along with that.
Glad to get some of your thoughts about CBD. Jess tweeted, I work in medicine and am a huge skeptic when it comes to alternative treatments, but I've been using CBD balm for a pinched nerve that causes pain and tingling down my arm. And it works within minutes. My medically trained brain doesn't 100% understand why, but I'm sold. Elizabeth emailed, I've been using a CBD lotion for the past few years for whenever my menstrual cramps or headaches get too painful. I'm allergic to most painkillers, so this was a good alternative that provides good relief for me while still being able to function and go to work and class. Thank you for sharing your stories. We welcome more of them. But let's add a few more voices to the conversation for a few more firsthand stories about using CBD. Joining us from Clarksville, Tennessee is Mandy Bloomingdale. She's part of a patient family that has found success using CBD to deal with some serious medical conditions, including epilepsy. Mandy, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Joining us from Deerfield Beach, Florida, is Laura Fuentes, the co-founder and CEO of Green Roads, which is an award-winning CBD company. She's also a licensed pharmacist. Laura, welcome.
Thank you, Joshua. It's great to be here.
Mandy, let me start with you. I understand that both you and your daughter use CBD to help with seizures. Can you talk about what you had been doing before CBD to deal with your seizures and how well or poorly it worked?
Me and my daughter, Anna, we were just on medications. I know for my daughter, she was on 37 pills a day, and she was still having 35-plus breakthrough seizures a day.
I'm sorry, you said she was taking 37 pills every day?
Yes.
And she would still have dozens of seizures every single day?
Every single day.
What did you know about CBD, Mandy, before your doctor recommended it for your daughter? Had you heard of it?
I know when people had recommended it to me, but I was very uneducated on what the CBD plant really did. Because when I heard CBD, I'm like, I'm not going to give my kid marijuana.
What was the conversation like with your doctor when your doctor recommended it? How did that go?
So how the conversation went was basically their doctor was saying there's really not a whole lot else that we can do for her. She's been on every drug out there, and there's really nothing else that we can try. And I'm like, what do you mean there's nothing else that we can try? And then we brought up CBD, and she's like, well, legally, technically, I can't say yes. Because at that point in time, this was 4 years ago, it wasn't either state or federally legal for CBD. And I remember her saying, well, I'll tell you this much. If, you know, my child's doctor said there's nothing else that we can do for my kid, I would definitely look into my options. And I've heard a lot of good things about CBD. I'm like, that's all I needed to hear. So I went home and I just started researching.
Was there a point at which you decided, okay, let's give this a shot, where you felt comfortable with it? Or did you just kind of do it because you were at the end of your rope? Like, what sealed the decision for you?
So I went home that night. My daughter, let me just tell you, she left in a wheelchair. She was non-functioning, non-verbal, communicating to us in sign language. And I started researching CBD. And there were several other companies that I had looked at, but it was whenever I came across Charlotte's Web brand from Colorado and hearing her story and how it was life-changing. And so that's the brand that we actually went with.
How did other people react, Mandy, when they found out that you were going to try CBD to help with these seizures? Did they get it? Did they judge you? What was that like?
I felt very judged, and you know, I tried to explain to them, hey, she's not getting high, she's not, you know, and I would send people resources and just say, educate yourself.
And Laura, but in just a minute, I'd love to hear, Laura, how you deal with educating new clients and new customers about CBD. That's got to be one of the big kind of learning curves that you deal with, is just telling people what it's about. But before I get to you, Laura, let me keep going with you, Mandy. Describe the beginning of this treatment regimen with CBD. Were you giving your daughter, was it a pill? Was it like a tincture and an eyedropper? What form did it take?
It was the tincture and the eyedropper. And I remember doing a follow-up with Dr. Reddy about 6 weeks after she got released from the hospital. And like I said, she left the hospital in a wheelchair. 6 weeks later, we had a follow-up, and my daughter's running up and down the hall. And I'll never forget the doctor's face when she looked at me and she says, this isn't the same child that left here a little over a month ago in a wheelchair.
How soon did you begin to see progress, Mandy?
Within, I would say, the first 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. So, and what was that like for you? Like, what went through your head, what went through your heart when you saw your daughter mobile again?
It was everything. Like, she's a whole different child. and just seeing the effects of it, it just brings so much joy to me because her quality of life now, fast forward 4 years later, she's reading chapter books when she didn't even know her alphabet 4 years ago. She's doing addition, subtraction, multiplication. Yes, she's still in the sped classroom, but she's making leaps and bounds progress on a daily basis.
I don't think I remember to ask you this, but how old is your daughter now?
She's 13.
She's 13. So she was about 9 years old when this started?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about you? How you said that you and your daughter have both taken CBD. How does it make you feel? What was the impact for you?
Well, because I have epilepsy too, and I get really bad migraines. And I remember thinking, well, if I'm going to give this to my child, I'm going to try it first. And I did. And since then, like, I have been able to taper off every single drug that I was on, and I just strictly do CBD. With Anna, she only takes 4 pills a day now, and that's not just for the epilepsy. She has episodic ataxia type 2 as well, so she needs to be on pills for that. But it's, when I say it's been life-changing, it has.
Before I get to Laura, Mandy, I'm curious to know what was the learning curve like for you, whether you had to make any adjustments along the way. One of our listeners, Headier Than Thou, tweeted, I've been taking CBD in a tincture form for a few months now. It has helped me to reduce anxiety and thus helps me to fall asleep since I'm not in my head stressing myself out as much at night. Unfortunately, I've noticed that tolerance builds quickly, so I occasionally take a week or two off. Mandy, were there any changes, modifications you had to make as you went along? Was there a learning curve for you or your daughter in terms of the right way to take CBD?
Absolutely. When we first started with Charlotte's Web, there's like 3 different tiers and strengths. And we started on the first level. And then after time, like, I noticed that she's still having a little bit of issues. And so we go up to the next bottle. And then at the last point, like, she was on the very highest dosage that you can give a child. And then a few months ago, I want to say it was back in June, the FDA approved the first CBD oil on the market for epilepsy. There's 2 different forms that it's approved for, and Anna actually qualified for it. So now she's on Epidiolox. And even with that, like, we've had to make some adjustments. We've had to increase it a little bit, you know, as we've switched brands.
Yeah, before we get to Laura's story, Jane, could you talk a little bit more about that because Epidiolex was approved by the FDA last year. I believe it's the only legally available FDA approved purified form of CBD. Is that right?
Right. And I was hearing her so very, very powerful story, I was wondering whether she was on that drug, because that is the only approved use of truly approved by the FDA. So it's really interesting to hear that. And I think that's what's going to give people more confidence, people, you know, particularly skeptical reporters.
Ziva Cooper, your thoughts on Mandy's story?
So, again, you know, we hear these stories, and CBD seems to be having a profound effect on diseases and symptoms that are otherwise not being helped by traditional medications. And Mandy shared this unbelievable story and shared her journey with us. And we can see the evidence or potential evidence for how CBD might be able to help a range of indications and a range of diseases. But there also seems to be at this point a degree of frustration, because Mandy had to go through this journey and figure out which doses were good for her daughter, which products could be used for her daughter. And I think that what we're trying to see, or what we're starting to see right now, especially with the approval of Epidiolex, are, you know, clinical studies trying to determine the effectiveness of CBD for certain indications and what doses need to be used and what types of products can achieve the effectiveness. So Jane pointed out, you know, how Epidiolex was FDA approved in 2018, and that was really a landmark event. That was the first time that a cannabinoid had been FDA approved in about 30 years. and it was a plant-derived cannabinoid. So we see that the FDA is really open to looking at the strong supporting data, the strong supporting evidence that CBD might be helpful for a range of indications that people are using cannabidiol for.
Let me shift gears now to Laura Fuentes, the co-founder and CEO of Green Roads in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Laura, give us a sense of the range of the products you sell.
First, I'd like to say, Mandy, you know, I'm really happy for you. I'm really glad that the CBD is helping you. It's amazing stories. As far as the range goes, I mean, we hear things from as much as, you know, my dog couldn't walk any longer to my grandmother is her arthritis is better. She can walk. She can function. I mean, we hear everything. I hear thousands and thousands of testimonials throughout the week. We get letters. We get phone calls. Honestly, it's amazing the feedback that we're getting out there.
Now, I'm assuming, Laura, that you're not selling CBD in like a rolled up cigarette to light. Like what form does CBD take in the products that you sell?
Right now we sell capsules, topicals, sublinguals, and coffees and teas. And, you know, I'm really looking for feedback from consumers to see what way they ingest it and how it makes them feel and where they're getting the best results.
Is it kind of the same compound in just different delivery forms that people may prefer, like, oh, I'll take a pill as opposed to putting something under my tongue?
Yeah, some people are just really familiar with taking capsules, so they automatically gravitate to the capsules. Some people just want a little relaxation at the end of the evening, so they gravitate towards a tea. It really just depends on the consumer and what they're looking for.
Laura, how'd you get into the CBD business?
Well, I'm a licensed compound pharmacist for about 25 years now, and one of my customers and good friend came in with a jar of CBD oil back in 2012 and asked me what I knew about CBD, and at that time, I didn't know anything. They don't teach you that in pharmacy school. They don't really teach that in medical school yet either, but did a lot of research on it and found that the U.S. government has a patent on it as a neuroprotectant and an antioxidant, which I think are fabulous things to have in any type of a medical situation. Started making products in my kitchen just to see what it did and what it was all about. Gave it to friends and family, started getting amazing results. And then, you know, about 2 years later, we actually started selling our first products.
What kinds of results were you getting early on?
You know, results with topical situations, anxiety, sleep. I mean, you just name it. And it was helping. And it was just, for me, it was so confusing because, you know, I'm a pharmacist and we have a pill for everything. And this one seemed to cover so many of what all the different pills cover. So it's really fascinating.
Laura, sit tight. I want to talk to you more about the business side of this. I know we got to let Mandy go in just a minute. But Mandy, I wonder for other parents out there who may be listening to this, may not quite know what to think of CBD, but are maybe on the fence, on the bubble about investigating it further. What would you say to them? Any advice you would give them?
Just do research and make sure the companies that whoever you choose, they... I don't know how to really explain it. I'll just say, just do your research and do what's best for you. Do what's best for your child, because nobody else is going to if you don't.
And as for you and your child, what's next? Are you satisfied with the treatment regimen you have now? Are there other things that you're hoping will come on the market or become available? What's next?
I mean, we take a variety, like, you know, I'm not sure what your name was. I'm sorry. She mentioned the pill form because I've tried those as well. They have a salve, you know, because I do a lot of street outreach. We help run a nonprofit, YAPAC, which stands for You Are Important. But we have muscle pain sometimes. There's salves that you can buy and apply to those areas, and they help. I mean, it's been the only thing that's helped me. Like, I have, you know, tried pain pills in the past, but as long as I can, I want to avoid that.
Right.
And I'm strictly CBD. And so is the people on our team. So,
Mandy Bloomingdale, part of a patient family that's found some real success using CBD. Mandy, we appreciate you sharing your story. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll get some more of your stories and questions in a moment. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Laura Fuentes of Green Roads, Ziva Cooper of the UCLA Cannabis Research Initiative, and Jane O'Donnell with USA Today. We'll get to some more of your questions and stories in just a moment. Nikki wrote on our Facebook page, "I've seen a marked difference in my husband's nerve pain that no narcotics touched, or if they did help, they made him a zombie. He's been taking CBD in pill form from a company out of Breckenridge, Colorado. And although it's pricey, it's working. So we feel fortunate to be able to afford it." Laura Fuentes, what about the cost of these products? I imagine that some of them can get a little pricey depending on the nature of them.
They can get a little pricey. Right now, to extract the CBD itself, it is a little on the costly side. But I think, like from Green Road's standpoint, most of our cost comes in the laboratory testing that goes involved in everything. So once we get the raw ingredient in from wherever we get it, Colorado, Kentucky, or California, and we send it to the lab for a full panel testing. We want to make sure that, in fact, it does have the CBD. They're telling me it has. It does not have the THC. It doesn't have pesticides, solvents, microbials, or heavy metals. Then we formulate the products, and then we send it back to the lab again to make sure that everything is still where we want it to be. So that's where the costly part of the whole endeavor comes in.
That's kind of what one of our listeners, David, commented on. David emailed, "Your listeners should know that reputable, high-quality CBD producers have their products tested by independent labs for quality and content. Consumers should check products for this documentation and also steer towards CBD from hemp that's grown in the United States using organic farming practices." Speaking of hemp, I wonder if we should back up, Ziva, to Nigel's question. Nigel asked, "Please discuss the difference between CBD oil and hemp oil." Ziva?
So the question relates to where is the CBD coming from? At least this is what I gather from the implication of the label. So as Jane mentioned, in 2018, the 2018 Farm Bill was passed, which essentially legalized CBD that came from the hemp plant. Hemp is a cannabis plant that has less than 0.3% THC. And so what that means is that essentially cannabidiol from that plant is legal. And this is where it gets kind of complicated. Cannabidiol from other sources, so cannabidiol from the cannabis plant that has more than 3.3% THC, or even cannabidiol that's synthesized in the lab, is not considered legal. It is still considered to be on par with marijuana and with heroin with respect to its scheduling. So the label saying that it's CBD derived from the hemp plant should put consumers' mind at ease that this is a legal form of cannabidiol.
Laura, who's your target demographic? What kinds of people are coming in the door?
Right now, I would say the moms of America. They are the ones that are really doing their research, seeing what's out there, seeing what it could help potentially their family members for. You have to remember, moms treat their children, their parents, and themselves, as well as their husbands. So that's really the major demographic right now, which is, trickling down to the whole entire family.
Are those kind of the main reasons why your customers are coming in, because there's a family member they're trying to help, or is it broader than that?
Usually what happens is, They hear from somebody else that CBD helped them for such and such. And then that's when they come and start researching what CBD could possibly do for them.
Now, recently, some of 1A's team attended the opening of Veer and Wander, which is a self-proclaimed modern apothecary. It specializes in beauty products, many of which contain CBD. It's a company based in San Francisco. They just opened a location here in D.C. Our producer spoke with its founder, Connie McGrath, about the importance of packaging and branding when it comes to selling products with CBD.
I really think it takes the stigma off of it. Like I said, if you look at kind of old school, dispensary type looking bottles, people, it just doesn't resonate, a lot of times in a retail, obviously in a retail environment like ours, we kind of need to have something that pulls the customer in, but also has quality. And I think a lot of these brands, believe it or not, are all women founders, and they're also they want beautiful things. And so do shoppers. They want beautiful things. So I think that resonates, and also just the quality. It's like perfume. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. We have different marketing, obviously, but then also it's nice to take a brand that's just a CBD oil and really making it like a beautiful ritual. You know, it makes you want to use it when it's pretty.
That's Connie McGrath, the founder of Veer and Wander. We spoke to her at the opening of its Washington location. Laura Fuentes, I'd love your thoughts on what we just heard from Connie in terms of the packaging and the branding and the marketing to try to ease stigma.
Yeah, so the packaging is, you know, very difficult. It's you know, everybody sees things in a different way. We try to make our packaging medicinal looking because we consider ourselves to be a health and wellness company. So we want you to look at our packaging and say, hey, you know, this could potentially help me with a symptom I have. But as far as the packaging goes, I think the most important thing is that there's transparency on the packaging. There should be a QR code or some type of a coding mechanism that the patient can scan and go to see what exactly is in their product. They can have access to the lab result.
Now, Jane O'Donnell, to that point, that immediately makes me think about regulators, because packaging, marketing to make something look safe, appealing, attractive. We just went through this whole thing with e-cigarettes and companies like Juul, whose commercials now, if you looked at them, it says, this product contains tobacco and the Food and Drug Administration has determined that you could die. Like, they've really had to kind of amp up the marketing. So I see where Laura's coming from. I also see how regulators theoretically could be very concerned about that.
Yes, and I feel very strongly about this, having done a fair amount of research with a colleague, Kara Kelly, on a story on cosmetics and marketing and natural products. And I think it's very important here that there is this idea that because something's natural, it's safer. So aside from the fact that, goodness, you know, you're attracting somebody to something for cosmetics, like why do we even need CBD in our cosmetics? I have no idea. But it goes back to the FDA, which is the agency is very nervous. I didn't mean to suggest earlier that it wasn't, but you know, they truly, there's a lot on the website, even though they're not regulating it, about how little they know about how, if you're taking CBD and putting it in your cosmetics and your lotions, what kind of, like, how much could that be a CBD overload that leads to some problems? But I just want to caution people to not, you know, aside from the perhaps wasting your money aspect of it. We don't know that your products, your makeup is any better with CBD, and we don't even know if it's really good for you.
Laura, what's your outlook in terms of the potential regulatory framework you could be operating under, not just from the FDA, but also from the state of Florida, where recreational marijuana is not legal?
Yeah, I mean, as far as we're concerned, we're trying to emulate the FDA standards in the dietary supplement world, but we're taking it one step farther with having the QR coding system on our packaging so you can see what's in our products. Because going back to what was said earlier, it's really important to know if you're taking a product that has THC in it, even if it's a small amount of THC, because that could potentially show up on a drug test later. And it's also important to know if there's heavy metals in your product, because that, as we all know, lead poisoning is a serious issue in this country. So we're hoping, you know, that other CBD companies will stand up and start doing the same thing and just be transparent about what's in your product, because the end goal is the consumer to be safe. And that's what we're all trying to do here.
Right. And just to be clear, medicinal marijuana is legal in Florida. Recreational marijuana has not been legalized. And there are hundreds of thousands of Floridians who have gotten medical marijuana cards. Ziva Cooper, let me come back to you. We got a number of comments from people who are pretty skeptical about CBD based on their experiences. Radovan tweeted, I read a few research studies beforehand to try and get an idea of what proper/effective dosage would be. It's a lot. I bought the highest concentration I could find and still had to take about 1.5 milliliters orally before there was any noticeable effect whatsoever. It was slightly calming. That's it. Considering the price, I'd put it pretty close to the snake oil category. I think you get much more bang for your buck with ibuprofen or a shot of whiskey, honestly. Ziva, how much of this could just be a placebo effect?
So your listener does point out the available research, the available science that has been done with respect to comparing cannabidiol to a placebo and its effects on a certain condition. So, you know, there have only been a handful of indications that have been studied thus far, and the doses used for those studies that have shown effectiveness have been huge, you know, 600 to 1200 milligrams. So these are substantial doses, and they're not necessarily the types of doses that are available in cannabis dispensaries or in other places that you can find CBD.
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you, but when you talk about 600 milligrams potentially being an effective dose, can you compare that to the impact of THC, the chemical that gets you high in cannabis? What kinds of milligram quantities of THC produce a psychoactive effect, just by way of comparison?
It really depends on who it is that's using the THC. So THC is going to have different effects in different people. So if somebody is using THC for long periods of time, a very small amount, so 2.5 milligrams of THC, might not have any effect. It might not be intoxicating. It might not have a pain-relieving effect. But for somebody who's not a cannabis user, 2.5 milligrams might produce pain relief. In fact, we know that 2.5 milligrams of THC does produce pain relief. So it really depends on the person, on how much THC they're using, or if they're using cannabis as well. We touched a little bit upon the potential tolerance effects with cannabidiol that patients might see, where they might have to increase their doses over time to see a therapeutic effect. And, you know, that's one area that we don't really know anything about at this point. And so this is one important issue that has to be addressed if people are going to be using cannabidiol every day for a therapeutic effect. Do they have to increase their dose over time? And what are some of the adverse effects that the FDA is concerned about?
Laura, how would you respond to Radovan's comment, particularly putting it close to the snake oil category? What would you say to that?
So for what I've seen over the past few years, everybody is different. True. What we recommend is that they start low, start at a low dose and increase slowly over time, because 5 milligrams might be plenty for somebody to get the relief they're looking for. And other people might need 600 milligrams. It's just everybody's different and every condition is different and everybody's body reacts differently to CBD. But we always say, go, you know, start low and increase slowly, because the worst thing is for someone to start off at this ginormous dose that they don't need and they're wasting their money. That, you know, that's not the end goal here. The goal is to get the patient the potential best treatment possible. So start off at a low dose, increase slowly over time until you see the effects that you're looking for.
Jane O'Donnell, is this just a step toward full legalization of marijuana? I've had this conversation with some folks, and they feel like, why are we, like, enough? Like, we've been dating for long enough. Let's just tie this knot already.
Oh, boy, that's a whole nother show, and I hope we can talk about that. It does seem like we're moving in that direction, but as somebody who's doing a lot of research also on marijuana, there's a lot of public health downsides to that. So I certainly hope not. And I hope that there isn't a rush to make it easier for people to get all kinds of CBD without any proof that it's actually working. I mean, just yesterday I was pitched on something that would have cost $165 to possibly make me sleep better. Is there any evidence that there was a CBD product at a salon? Is there any evidence that that would be better and safer than a prescription drug, which nobody's in favor really of sleep, prescription sleep aids, but there's therapy, there's over-the-counter drugs, there's everything Arianna Huffington says in her book. So I really hope that people slow down and look at all the downsides.
Ziva, before we let you go, what's the next frontier for all this research? What's the next big question that researchers are working on?
So here at UCLA, what we're attempting to do is we're attempting to get clinical studies underway. So comparing cannabidiol to placebo for a range of conditions such as pain, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep, aging, to really be able to guide patients as well as healthcare providers with respect to what doses can we expect to see the potential medical effects, what adverse effects should we be aware of, so that we can inform our patients to be cautious when using cannabidiol. But in general, you know, if you look at the clinical studies that are going on right now in the last 2 years, again, there's been a boom in this. And so people are very interested in cannabidiol for sleep, mm-hmm. cannabidiol for anxiety, cannabidiol to help reduce inflammation. And whether or not and what doses cannabidiol can do this is still an open question with respect to clinical studies. We've heard a lot of anecdotal reports from your listeners over the course of the hour
right.
of people having phenomenal effects. So here's our real opportunity to do the well-controlled placebo studies to figure out if it can do this.
Ziva Cooper, the research director at UCLA's Cannabis Research Initiative. Ziva, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Laura Fuentes, the co-founder of Green Roads. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
And Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USC Today. Jane, thanks very much.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and Avery Kleinman. You can learn about our team at the1a.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.